all have it, and only a few of us are ever taught how to deal with it. What is it? It's paper. It is everywhere. All the time I hear clients say that they feel like they're just absolutely buried under paper. And it's so easy to feel like things are out of control when you can't put your hands on an important document when you need it, or when your desk, chair, or floor is covered with piles. This module is dedicated to sharing with you some easy strategies for dealing with paper. We'll talk about how to address the various types of paper that come across our desks, and what to do with it once it's there. If you're wondering about scanning, we'll be talking about that in the next module, Technology. I help almost all of my clients deal with paper, especially since almost all of us have it. But some have bigger challenges than others. In addition to being the CEO of her own family, one client has to manage paperwork for several businesses that her family owns. There are tons of documents, contracts, and bank statements, just dozens of them. Working together, we created a system that makes it easy for her and the people connected to her business to find what they need when they need it, and so that it's easy to put the documents away when they're done using them. Sound impossible? It's not. I'm going to share with you how you can create a system that will work just as well for you. But first, some background information. According to a recent survey by IDC, 95% of all information in business is still processed in paper form, and the average worker prints about 45 sheets a day in the typical business office. That number seems like a lot to me. I'd guess probably a little bit less for each of us, but even if you're printing just 5 sheets a day, over the course of 1 week, that's 25 new pieces of paper that you need to deal with. And of course, that doesn't account for all the things that you collect while you're out in the world from clients or vendors or from classes or seminars that you might attend. So the paperless office, which was promised to us, just didn't happen. There are technologies that can help us reduce the amount of paper that we have and that we have to process, but regardless of how much we do it, there's still paper that we have to work with. So don't expect to achieve a paper-free life. It just can't happen, at least not yet, maybe in the future, but not right now. Instead, shoot for less paper. Paper less, not paper free. That is an achievable goal. Maybe you want to reduce the amount of paper you're keeping by 50%. That's achievable. But reducing it 100%? Not possible. And it would be way too difficult to make that happen. So instead of shooting for zero paper, shoot for a realistic target of reducing the paper that you currently have and that you have to process. The key to dealing with paper effectively, before you can even create a system to manage it, is to understand that paper has a life cycle of its own. Of course, it can feel like paper takes on a life of its own when it starts to gather and sit in piles on our desks or on our floors, but the truth is there are a series of stages that every piece of paper goes through from the time when it comes into your office to the time when it leaves. And understanding those steps is essential to managing paper effectively. The stages of the life of paper are, first, paper comes into your space. Whether it's from the outside world or something that you generate, new paper that's unprocessed comes into your immediate workspace in some form. Then, at some point, you might sort the paper. Maybe you sort it into due date, or categories, or action types. But at some point, you sit down and you group the papers together in some way that means something to you. Once things are grouped, then they're processed. You take the actions that each piece of paper requires to be completed. Maybe a document needs to be read. Another might need to be paid. Then, once the documents have been processed, they leave your immediate workspace. That means if something needs to leave and go out in the mail, it gets sent out. Or if something is reference or archival, it might be put into a file box or a drawer. If something needs to be destroyed, it might be recycled or shredded. Those four stages, things coming in, documents being sorted, then processed, and then leaving, are the four stages in the life cycle of paper. In order to effectively manage your paper, you'll need a dedicated space devoted to managing each step in the life cycle of paper. What I recommend is having an inbox for all the things that are new. And this is where your mail, your papers, your business cards can land until you have time to actually sort them and work on them. Then you'll have a hot files area. This is where the sorting and processing step of managing paper happens. This is for all of your paper that you're currently working on, and this is where you keep it while it's active. This is not permanent storage, and this handles the sorting and processing of your paper. Then you'll have an archival area, or a cold storage area. This might be a file cabinet or a file drawer for reference information and other types of documents that are not time-sensitive, that you're not currently working on, and that you need to hold on to. And then finally, you'll have an outbox for things that are leaving your space, like faxes or outgoing mail. Let's look at each of these in a bit more detail. First up is the inbox. And your inbox is a spot where everything goes, all your new paper, all the new documents, all the new things that you've printed, and everything that's come in through the mail, where all of that goes until you actually have time to sort and process the information. The purpose of this is multifold. First, you always want to separate things that are brand new from things that are in process. If you've ever had a stack of paper on your desk and you were working on something, and then the new mail came in and you put that on top of the stack, and then you left for the day, and the process continued for a few days where you kept adding to the stack, it gets really tough to sort out where your original document was, let alone what's new, what's been processed, versus what hasn't. So in order to prevent that from happening, we want a dedicated space for all of those things that you haven't yet worked on or looked at. So it's best to have some sort of tray or box or basket somewhere in your workspace that's dedicated solely for putting new mail and new unprocessed documents into. And the aesthetics of this can be based on your own personal choices. You might want something that is open, like a tray or a box or basket, or something that's closed that has a lid on it, like some sort of container. Beware, if you're the type of person that if something has a lid on it or is closed, what's inside it is essentially gone, you might not want to choose something like that for your inbox. You want some sort of visual reminder that things are inside of there. So with this step, with having an inbox, it's important to know that it's completely action-free. The only thing you do is drop your new papers in there, and then you'll work on them later. You don't actually take any actions in this step. You don't read the mail. You don't even open it, actually. You don't process the papers. All you do is put them in. The actions come up next, but the only purpose of this is to collect all your documents so that they're ready and waiting for you when you actually have time to work on them. So it's essential that you create an inbox to manage all of those pieces. After documents have collected in your inbox, then it's time to manage the sorting and the processing step and take actions on your documents so that they can continue to move along in their life cycle. What most people are missing when I go into their offices is a dedicated space for managing this step in the process. So what I recommend doing is creating an area called the hot files. And this could be a desktop file box or a small section of your file drawer. Its only purpose is to sort and separate all of the documents that you either need to work on or are currently working on so that they don't get mixed in with the other things that you're working on or the things that are brand new. Paper moves into the hot files from your inbox, and within your hot files, there's some separation. There are some categories. And unlike a tickler file, which is separated by date, your hot files are organized by action category. So think about all the actions that that stack of paper on your desk requires. They're not all just to-dos. Instead, think in more detail. What specifically does each piece of paper need to have done? Some common action categories are things like bills to pay, mail to read, correspondence, things to discuss with someone else, calendar items, calls to make, things to research online. These are all really common action categories that should have their own separate hanging file in your hot files. That way, as you're sorting through your inbox, you can simply drop each document into the corresponding hot file. Once things are in your hot files, it's easy to grab a folder and take all of the actions at once. So think about it. In your current stack of papers, there might be some calls you need to make, some other actions you need to take, like adding things to your calendar or maybe doing some correspondence. When things are in a big jumble like that, it's hard to stay on track, it's hard to stay focused, and it's definitely hard to get any sort of momentum. But if things are organized into categories based on action in your hot files, You can take out the calls folder and make all of the calls at once. You can take out all of the add to address book and put things into your address book all at once. So this can actually save you a lot of time, because instead of doing a lot of different types of actions at one time, you're doing a lot of one type of action at one time. So it streamlines your workflow considerably. So documents move from your inbox into your hot files. Once they're in your hot files and sorted into their corresponding action categories, which there are some sample categories in your workbook, you of course can add your own as well. Once documents are sorted into their action categories, you process the papers until the documents are gone, until there's no more actions that they need, other than maybe just to be filed. Once things have been completely processed, then your documents move on to other places, but they don't live in your hot files indefinitely. Instead, they'll move on either to an outbox or an archive, or maybe to the recycle bin or the shredder, which we'll go over in a moment. But it's important to note that things that are permanent do not live in your hot files. They live someplace else. Only current things that need actions, that need to have something done to them or with them, live in your hot files. Now, for those documents that have moved through your hot files that you still need to hold on to, those will go into a place called the archive. And this is for the information that you need to store indefinitely or for a while. This is your infrequently accessed, more permanent storage solution. This is typically a file cabinet, a file drawer, or a file box. And the purpose of this space is to store those things that you don't need access to all the time, but that you need to retrieve every so often. So if something is a document that you need to use every single day, you might want to make a special folder for that in your hot files. But typically, if you're accessing a document less than once a week or even just once or twice a month, you might want to make a place for it in your archives so that it's out of your immediate workspace, yet still retrievable when you need it. Just like your hot files, your archive is organized by category. And think about the different types of categories that you might have in your archives. You might have categories for your vendors, your customers or clients, invoices that you've printed or received, financial statements or projections. Each of those groupings would get a category, a folder, and maybe some files within the folders for your archive files. Now, a word about category creation. I know people agonize over what to call their different folders, and the truth is it's a lot easier than you might think. What typically happens is someone will look at a document. Let's say it's a profit and loss statement. And they'll try to think of what the right thing to call it is. And so when they look at the profit and loss statement, they might initially think to call it finances. But then they think, well, maybe finances isn't quite right. Maybe I should call it money. Or maybe I should call it numbers. Numbers sounds good. I'll call it numbers. So they file the document under numbers. Later, when they're going back to look for it, they didn't remember that they filed it under numbers, and they look and they look and they look in their file cabinet and just can't find the document. So they print it again. If that's ever happened to you, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That's why it's so important to create category names that make sense for you. The easiest way to do it is whatever the first name that pops into your head is what you should call your file structure. The reason why is when you're going back to retrieve your document later, that's the same thing that's going to pop into your head when you're looking for something. So don't overthink your file names. If when you're looking at a profit and loss statement, the first thing that pops into your head is finances, call that folder finances. There's no need to overthink it, and there's no need to get it right, per se. There is no right. There's only right for you. Especially if you're going to be the only person accessing your files, it doesn't matter what someone else would call them. All that matters is what you would call them, because what you call them is how you want to access them and retrieve them later. If you're working in a team, then it sometimes is helpful to get consensus or agreement on what to call files, but in the end, it should rest on the shoulders of the person who's going to be using the files the most, because they're the one that's going to be needing to remember the different file names. Now, there is a reference tool that you can create to remember what's in your file system. It's called a file map, and a sample one is provided in your workbook. This is essentially a list of the different folder names or file names that are in your overall paper management system, so that at a glance you can see what the different files are called and what lives where. This can be a helpful document to keep handy, not only as you're learning to use your new paper management system, but also as other people join your business. You can hand this to them as a reference document so that they can know which files live where. So again, as you're creating folders and files for your archives, keep in mind that the only person, generally speaking, if you're in a very small business, that needs to remember what the file names are is you. So create the folder structure based on your needs and how you think. Now, there's going to be some papers that you don't need to hold on to and that you just simply need to move out of your space. For those documents, it's important to have an outbox. And an outbox is a companion to your inbox, and like the name implies, its sole purpose is to collect all the things that are on their way out of your space so that they don't get mixed in with the things that are either brand new or in process. And just like your inbox, this can be a tray, a box, a basket, some sort of container that can live on or near your desk or where you process your paper. This makes it easy to grab all of those things that are leaving and take them with you when you're on your way out the door of your office. So for instance, let's say you've processed through your hot files, and there's some things that need to go in the outgoing mail. Once you're done processing them, you could drop them into the outbox and then take them with you when you leave. This makes it easy so that you don't have to search your space for those things that are leaving. You never have to go through the piles again if you have an inbox, a hot files, and an outbox. There will be no more piles because everything will have a home. Probably the most common question that comes up when I help clients organize their paperwork is, but how long should I keep it? And I wish there was an easy answer to this question, but as you might expect, the reason why this is so hard for people to answer is because the answer varies for each individual in each situation. There is no one rule for how long to keep things. If you're thinking about keeping documents simply for IRS or tax purposes, there's two things that I'd like you to do. First and foremost, talk to your tax preparer. They will know for sure, based on your tax situation and the rest of your financial picture, how long you need to keep your documents. Some tax preparers will tell you 3 years, some 5 years, others 10 years. Whatever yours says is what you should do. Now, if you're keeping documents specifically for your own reference, that's another story. You might want to think about going through your files every 6 months or so and removing the things that you no longer want, need, or use. But in terms of how long to keep things in general, it really varies based on what the purpose of keeping them is. So for instance, if you're keeping multiple versions of old documents because you're keeping them for historical reasons or for different types of perspective or just because you wanted to see what you'd done before, there is no one right answer for how long you should keep those things. One of the ways to determine how long to keep them could be on space available. Do you have room to store these things? If so, keeping them for a little bit longer might not be problematic. But if you're running short on space, then you might want to be a little bit more ruthless with how long you keep things. In your workbook, there's a document called Recommended Retention Guidelines. Now, this is just a sample, and you can fill in your own ideas here for about how long to keep your own non-tax-related documents. Of course, your decisions about how long you keep things will vary from what someone else does, and that's okay. As far as IRS guidelines, I've also included links to a couple of different helpful IRS publications, record keeping for both individuals and for businesses, that can help you get an idea, not an answer, but an idea for how long to keep things. Again, I encourage you to talk to your tax preparer because they can give you the specific information for your own personal or business record keeping needs. Now that you have a strategy for how to deal with paper throughout its life cycle, let's look at some of the different types of paper that you might come into contact with and how to deal with those specifically. First, let's talk about business cards. If you're going to networking events, if you're attending classes or seminars, if you're meeting other people, it's likely that you're giving them your business card, and then you're collecting theirs. If you're like most of the people who I work with, you probably take the business cards, maybe you put a rubber band around them, and you drop them into a drawer or a box, and typically they're never seen nor heard from again. This is a waste of time. It's a waste of your time on several levels. First, if you're not taking action on those business cards, it wasn't a helpful endeavor for you to go to those networking events or seminars in the first place. And second, it's a waste of time for you later when you have to sort and process through those cards, racking your brain trying to figure out who these different people are. So it's important to have a strategy for dealing with business cards as soon as you first collect them. When you first return back to your office from a networking event or a seminar where you've collected a bunch of cards, immediately go through the cards and decide which people you'd want to contact again and which ones you wouldn't. For the people who you can't think of a reason why you'd want to contact them again, or maybe you just didn't like them, recycle their business cards immediately. For the other folks that you do want to contact again, drop those business cards into your hot files under Add to Contact List or Add to Address Book. That way, when you have time to sort and process your paper, you can take action on all those business cards at once. So let's say the time has come for you to go through your hot files and work on processing your business cards. Here's what I suggest you do. Transfer the items, the different contact information pieces, on the business card into your address book. And it doesn't really matter whether your address book is on the computer or if it's something paper-based. It just matters that you have something, some place, to keep all of your contact information together. In addition to transferring the basic contact information, like the person's name, their business name, their phone number, their email address, etc., it's essential that you copy other important details that will help you remember this person. First, note where and when you met them. Was it at a specific networking event? Was it at a seminar? Was it at a trade show? Note where and when you met them, because that will help you remember them later. Also, note down some key memory triggers. What did they wear? What did they look like? What was the conversation you had with them about? Did they tell you a funny detail or story that you'll help to connect with them later? Note that down in your address book. And finally, also note how you can help them, or vice versa. Do they provide a valuable service that you can offer to your clients? Or do you have something that you can offer them or the people that they serve? Under what circumstances might you want to contact them again? All of these bits and pieces of information help you build the relationships that are so important in the world of small business. And the more of this information you have captured in your address book, the more likely it is that you'll be able to contact this person, and you can make that connection a valuable one by having this information at the ready. Once you've transferred all this information into your address book, then you can either recycle the business card, or if you need to keep it for visual reference as a memory jog for yourself, you could keep it in a business card book, or on a Rolodex, or in some sort of file. But don't keep it in a rubber band stashed in a drawer. That just isn't effective for referencing them later. Another type of paper that you're likely to encounter are receipts. Let's say you go out to dine with a client. There's a receipt for that. You might receive some bills in the mail that you pay. Those are invoices or receipts as well that you need to hold on to. All of those things need to be kept track of, not only for your own record keeping, but also for the IRS. In case you ever get audited, the IRS wants to know that whatever you've claimed on your taxes matches the records that you've kept. So having a system for managing your receipts and other financial expenses, write-offs, etc., is essential. The easiest system that I have found for managing this type of information, if you're keeping the paper versions, is an accordion file. An accordion file can be purchased at any office supply store. And the thing to know here is that you want to get the accordion file that's labeled 1 through 31, that has a flap so it can be closed. We're not actually going to use the numbers. Instead, we're going to relabel each of the slots for each of your expense categories. So, for instance, think about the different types of expenses that you have during the course of a business day. You probably have expenses for meals and entertainment, office supplies, internet access, business phone, cell phone, maybe office rent. All of those different categories would get a slot in the expense accordion. That way, as the year goes on, you can simply drop those expenses into the corresponding slot in the accordion. When the year is over, you can simply add up the expenses within each category and give the totals to your tax preparer. Most tax preparers don't even want to see your receipts. They simply want the totals. So you can actually save yourself time and money because you won't need to do the day-long sort of receipts that typically happens if you've been shoving everything into a box or into a bag. Or you won't have to pay your tax preparer to do that for you, which is a needless expense, especially if you have an easy system to keep track of your receipts like this one. Each year you would create a new accordion file, and you would label it with the corresponding year. At the end of the year, when you have your taxes prepared, you would take the tax return and put it in the front slot of the accordion, seal up the flap, and archive the entire thing. This way, if you ever were to be audited, you have not only the tax return, but all of the supporting documents there ready in case of an audit. Generally speaking, it's a good idea to also look at ways that you can reduce the types of paper and the amount of paper in general that's coming through your door. The less paper that comes in, the less you have to process. So reducing paper is a great strategy for lessening the amount of time that you have to spend processing paper overall. For instance, you can switch to paperless or recurring billing or e-bills. You can opt out of receiving certain types of mail. If you're at a seminar, a trade show, or an event, don't pick up the different brochures and other types of documentation that are there unless you actually plan on reading it or using it. Many conferences now let you download their conference booklets in PDF or other electronic form. So look for all of the little things that you can do to reduce the amount of paper that's coming across your desk. Also, if you're suffering from junk mail, as many of my clients are, in your workbook there are a number of resources which can help you reduce or even eliminate the junk mail that's coming into your office. This is one type of mail that you want to immediately get rid of as quickly as you can, because it simply sucks your time. So between getting rid of junk mail, switching to some e-bills, and not taking as many documents when you're out in the world, you can actually reduce the amount of time that you're spending on paper quite a bit. If you have a backlog of paper that you're trying to get through, let's say many years' worth of files that you're trying to weed out, or just a ton of paper that you're not sure where to start with, here are some strategies that can help you deal with the giant backlog. First, you want to work on the paper that's the most recent, because those are the ones that will typically have the more important, more timely decisions that need to be made. Work through the newest papers going in reverse chronological order. So start with what's newest, and then work through what's there, and then move on to what's a little bit less new, and so on and so forth, until you're finally working on the stuff that's really old. Usually the stuff that's really old is typically pretty easy to go through because it may be outdated, it may no longer be relevant, and just generally the decisions that you'll need to make on them are easier because at that point you'll have already practiced making decisions on your newer paper. So by the time you get to your older paper, it'll seem like a walk in the park. Also, another strategy for dealing with a backlog of paper is to take it in stages. So let's say you have 10 file boxes that you need to get through. You might choose to work on one file box per week, or one section of a file box per week. But define what you want to accomplish in a given time period, and then focus on achieving just that. Once you've completed that section, don't worry about moving on to the next one, as long as you've already scheduled time to work on it. You don't need to overdo it. Especially if you're dealing with a giant backlog, dealing with it can be pretty tiring, because you're making decision after decision after decision. So pace yourself and take the project in stages. For the documents that you're getting rid of, make sure to dispose of them properly. If something has any sort of personal or identifying or confidential information on it, definitely shred it. It's better to be safe than sorry with this type of information. If you have a lot of documents that need to be shredded, you might want to look in your local city or town for a professional document shredding service. These services allow you to either take to them boxes and boxes of shredding at a time, or in some cases they can bring a shredding van to you. If you have an ongoing need for shredding, they can provide you with a locked bin that they can simply pick up when it's full, and they can take it to their facility for shredding or shred it in a truck. If you have just a small amount to shred, it's worthwhile to buy a small shredder. Now, typically you don't want to get the ones that are around $20. They just don't hold up for very long. The better ones are in the $80 to $150 range. And this is a worthwhile investment if you're anticipating having a need to shred things on an ongoing basis. The less expensive shredders, while they seem attractive at first, they can usually only handle two or three sheets at a time, and they tend to jam or burn out very quickly. Whichever option you choose, whether to work with a professional shredding company or to have your own personal shredder, make sure that you have some method for disposing of your documents in a secure fashion. For the other things that you'll be getting rid of, make sure that you have a recycle bin somewhere in your office or near your desk that makes it convenient for you to simply drop things that you're done with into. Then when it's time to take out the trash, you can simply add what you have in your office to the rest of your shredding. Well, you've reached the end of the paper management module. In this module, we talked about how the paperless office just didn't quite happen. We talked about the life cycle of paper and how important it is to create dedicated spaces for each of the steps in paper's life cycle, including the inbox, the hot files, the archives, and the outbox. We talked about some retention guidelines for how long to keep your different types of paper and how important it is for you to talk to your tax preparer. We also talked about some of the specific types of papers that you might deal with, including business cards and receipts. We discussed strategies for stemming the tide of paper, including getting rid of junk mail and switching to paperless or recurring billing. And we looked at ways to help you get through a backlog if you've got a lot of old papers that you need to deal with. Finally, we discussed options for how to responsibly get rid of the papers that you no longer want, need, or use. Take a few minutes and fill out your next steps in your action plan in your workbook.